I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. We rise.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Hey, everybody, welcome on in. It is a Wednesday right here for you on Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us on the program. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery here, Scott Mitchell across from me.
Do you remember that really snowy day we had? And I said, Alex, I don't think we should come into work today.
Vaguely,
do you remember that when
I remember
one of the 100 times it snowed this last winter?
Yeah, and my recollection was
Someone bumped into me on the freeway.
Scott, we don't miss work. And that's one of the things I like you for, is that you go, you trudged on, you got rear-ended by somebody, you still came in, you had one of those neck braces on, your truck was mangled. And
I just got my truck back today.
Oh, you did get it back?
Yes, got it back today.
By the way, it's June 1 tomorrow, and Scott finally got his truck back. Yeah.
Back in February, I got rear-ended.
Is that because of all the gold plating, that 24-karat gold paint that was special just for your truck?
No.
You finally got it back?
It's just a basic.
But what's the deal? Why did it take so long to fix a truck?
Because they're behind. COVID-related issues.
No, really?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Everything's COVID's fault.
They should get the ERC refund over there at the Ford store.
I should tell
them. Come on. Yeah, you should tell them. They had some supply chain disruptions. Come on.
I know. No, there's that's
for 1,000%.
That's a legitimate thing.
Everything has been supply chain affected.
Yes.
Think about when you ordered stuff during COVID and you couldn't get it in. You couldn't get it in forever. You know what's really sad about retail is I filter everything now that I buy on Amazon, whether or not I can get it that day. I'm all, can you deliver it to me today? And if you can't, I'm like really disappointed. I'm all, why on earth can I not get this today?
You know, I'm one of those people, I don't like to shop online.
You like to go...
I want to look at it, touch it, examine it.
Nah. Not me. Because if I don't like it, I filter it by free returns also.
So like, if you don't like it, just return it?
Yeah, man. Free returns.
What about these poor people that open their shop every day and you're like not going into their store?
Okay, have you met Amazon before?
I know who they are.
Here's the other thing. Free returns means I'm employing the guy who's driving back and forth, doing all the stuff. It's great. Yeah. That's the model now we live by.
How do they make money?
Can I get it overnight?
You don't have to pay for it.
Can I get it overnight? They do. They got me. I don't know how much I'm on the hook for with Amazon every month, but I'm there.
You know your credit card. Like, if you put something on your credit, it's not just free. You got to pay.
I get that. I didn't know that in college, but I know that now.
A lot of people don't.
No, that's how they get you. I told my kids the other day, I go, hey, like, we're going to have some really serious discussions because they all got their little debit cards, you know?
And their kids have debit cards?
Yeah, man.
Wow.
Yeah, because my wife graduated in business finance. She's going to get them.
You have a first world family is what you have.
1,000%. These kids are on they're on it. I am one of those believers in teaching the finances early. And I have a money smart wife, and so she's teaching him early, man. And she started dating me, and she had to clean up my act for me.
Did you have?
I had the worst credit on the planet. Did I was you? So bad because you know you're going through, and you're like, I can handle this, but you can't because you actually don't make much money when you're in college. At least I didn't. So anyway, but I
made a lot of money in college.
You did, huh?
No. I shouldn't say that.
I was going to say, did you ever, hey, now, statute of limitations is up. Was there ever a bag man that showed up at your house, dropped some cash off?
No.
No. Oh, wow. Too much of a hesitation. Jeremy, did you hear that hesitation? That was a pregnant pause. That was a pregnant pause right there. No, you're not going to get anybody in trouble now. They can't get in trouble now.
I may be dumb, but no, I'm not stupid. There's no way to get anybody in trouble.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
There's no one there to get in trouble.
Don't worry about it. Hey, we got a show to
kick off. I probably would have made more money if I'd have gone to BYU.
Maybe. Maybe. All right, here's what we're going to do. We got a show to kick off here. We got lots to jump into today. David Locke's going to join us later in the show. Mitch Harper, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, is also going to join us on a special show today. We got lots to jump into. But let's start the program off with what the future of realignment looks like. It's not realignment. It's just... you fired. That's what it's turning into. So let's jump in right here. It is The Cut.
The unquestioned. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made The Cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, The Cut and our program is always brought to you by a protein bar that is amazing. Local company, G2G Bar. G2G Bar. The G2G Bar brings you all natural ingredients, no preservatives, plenty of protein for anybody who needs that quick, tasty, nutritious boost. It is substantive. It is awesome. They don't just slap some, you know, some protein in there and then cover it in chocolate. That's not this. This tastes amazing. You want to give it a shot today. Let's get you the Costco, Holiday Oil, Maverick, Associated Foods. You can all find it there in the refrigerated section. Scott, let's. The interesting thing that I saw today that I wanted to jump into was the idea of. I mean, yesterday we were going back and forth about Colorado, and yes. I just think it's so insane that Colorado is trying to act like they have some sort of cards that they can play, because everybody knows that you are the least desirable program in the Pac-12, and when you say we're going to go to the Big 12 can't think to themselves it's because we really love Colorado and what it stands for. They might be thinking, this could come as a package deal, and that might help us. The problem is now is that, and this is what Joel Klatt said. Let me read a quote here for you. It says, you know what's next for us in college football? This is what he said on his podcast. I told you this is never going to stop, right? And I'm not lying. This is never going to stop because it's been about who can add and increase value and make more money. Pretty soon we're going to start seeing, it's going to start being about who can we drop that is going to make it more valuable. So, when you start to think about the conference quote-unquote realignment, you're going to start to see member institutions like the ones that we perennially make fun of in the Big Ten, in the SEC. Who do we make fun of in the SEC when we talk about you're not an SEC team?
Vanderbilt.
Missouri. There's a little bit of that feel, right?
Maybe Texas A&M.
I love it. Yeah, probably like a tech. Yeah. Now, they're not going to get dropped. There's too much money associated with them. For some reason, it's valuable in that sense. In the Big Ten, Rutgers, right? Maryland. Talk about Maryland. Huh? Oh, Illinois, even though Jeremy's wearing his National Champs 1951 Rose Bowl shirt because he's a big Illini fan. So you talk about teams, and now you're starting to talk about there's going to be a garbage heap, Scott. There's going to be a garbage heap. Now, that might be able to help other conferences that are maybe looking to build their portfolio. But if you're really going to make a super conference, can you do it with garbage teams? Teams that historically have never been good. Historically, like not even, like they don't sniff being good ever, right? And it's not just historically, it's not just, and I'm even saying some of these teams that they go, well, we're good at basketball. It's like, yeah, okay. And I think Kansas might be the exception to that rule. But if you are going to subtract, and here's the rest of what he said. He goes, that's absolutely coming because, again, there's not an unlimited source of money, and the money has to start getting smarter and not just adding teams, because TV partners aren't going to go, yeah, give us as many teams as you can. Give us that crazy matchup. Jeremy, what were you telling me today that NBC's starting their season off with on television? This is not a stellar start, by the way, on TV. And we got all these kickoff times that we're looking at for here locally and everything looks exciting. But NBC's all, here's who we're rolling with. What do you have?
West Virginia, Penn State's fine.
That's a pretty decent game.
It's okay.
Those are at least recognizable teams.
Charlotte, heard of them? At Maryland?
Is that the University of Charlotte?
No, I haven't heard of Charlotte. I mean, I know I have, but you don't
have. I had a daughter that went to school.
I know,
there.
But you're not. But you don't look at them and go, "What a football power!" I can't wait.
I don't
to
know
see
what their mascot is.
I know.
I think they're the 49ers. I think
that is a ripoff.
For what?
I don't know.
What 1949?
Maybe the other one, Syracuse, Purdue.
Oh my gosh!
NBC's speaking of paying all that money for those games,
right? Now Purdue has a limited. I can't figure out Purdue. Northwestern's kind of a little bit like that, too, because outstanding academic institution.
Purdue's better than Northwestern.
I agree. But Northwestern has gone to Rose Bowls in recent memory that I remember.
Drew Brees is a long time ago.
I don't remember.
Drew Brees at Purdue.
Long time.
Right.
Yeah, Purdue hasn't really done anything.
No. So when you start talking about
that. They've had players. They just haven't done anything.
But here's why the Colorado thing is nuts. And Joel Klatt, I agree 1,000% with. Because the thing about Colorado and us talking about it yesterday, they would be, if you're the Pac-12 and you go, who could we pair out of this situation that it would actually increase our value because you don't want a team like that in our conference? And I think Colorado would be at the top of that list.
I don't think Colorado moving forward maybe would be frozen out of things. But I mean, if Deion Sanders turns around, it's had a history. I mean, I don't know how you determine what teams stay and what teams get dropped. Is it they've had a history, they've shown that they could potentially be a good program. Maybe they're down right now. I mean, like Florida State hadn't done anything in a while. Are they a team that gets left out?
No, I don't think so.
I think there's some past clout or potential with a team like Colorado. But you look at Utah and you'd say Utah's success has been recent. You know, so is Utah a team that's going to continue to? I mean, I hope so. If they continue how they are, yeah, they're going to be good. You know, they're probably going to be in a good position. I mean, where's BYU? I mean, I don't think Independence did anything for BYU, and then they get in the Big 12, and are they a middle of the road team in the Big 12? Do they kind of rise to the top of the conference? You know where. So I guess when they say drop, you know, that's the alignment. I mean, I certainly could see a lot of teams in every conference. You just automatically go, yeah, you're kind of out of it. What if you did this? What if you had different conferences for different sports? So what if you had a basketball conference for all the good basketball programs and then the other ones didn't play in football? Because they're not synonymous. I mean, Kentucky is good. Kansas is good in one sport, but they're not in another. So maybe the alignment gets even more refined to what kind of sport you're playing.
So then, because I think that it did feel weird too, where you're just like, dude, who can we get? And I think that the Pac-12 has been locked up in that too, a little bit in that just like, oh, let's get some people. Let's get that market, right? San Diego State, we just go, well, let's get that market. Let's get that Southern California market. Oh, let's grab this team over here because we want that market. And I think that you get caught up in the idea of that being a quality move just because it's there. And I don't necessarily agree.
San Francisco is a big market. Do you want to grab Stanford and Cal? I mean, people are saying yes. I mean, some people say yes. Some people like Stanford and Cal.
Yeah, not for that reason, because you and I both have seen how bad.
They're never going to be. People aren't going to watch Stanford.
No, that's what I was going to say. How bad the viewership is locally up there in San Francisco for, you know, Northern California for the.
Do you know what the problem
for
is?
For those teams.
You know what the problem is with this whole theory? The problem starts because you've had a subjective national champion. And so in order to make the playoffs, you have to have a cupcake schedule. So you're going, you can't lose any games. So you go, well, we're going to schedule, you know, I mean, the SEC is debating whether they want to have 8 or 9 games right now because they know the value of having an easier schedule gives them a higher probability of losing fewer games, which makes them ranked higher. And it's the only place anywhere that it's all subjective. You know, it's not what you do on the field. It's not how you compete. It's not whether you win or lose, which is kind of how it is with every other sport. It's just like, nah, you look like the best team. So we're going to – and so if you really want, you know, to you got to give, you got to put it on the field, and it's okay if you lose a few games if you're playing better teams. And because I'm all for the best matchups, believe me, I think teams are afraid to get those better matchups because they don't want to have a harder schedule because then they're not ranked.
A year ago,
if Utah would have picked a cupcake team at the beginning of the year and not played a Florida, you know, even though they should have won the game and whatever. But if they start out the season not losing that game, they, you know, maybe their season's completely different. Maybe they end up going to the college football playoffs because they just picked an easier schedule.
See, I think that if you're thinking about it and you're a Pac-12 fan or what, you know, you think to yourself, what's the health of the conference look like? Losing a Colorado might actually increase your value. I mean, really. Not because losing numbers is looked at and people go, oh my gosh, we're falling apart. You're falling apart. But if you take away a Colorado, which by the way, even if Deion has a couple of bowl seasons, you know, bowl eligible seasons, you know, if they go 7-5 this year, maybe they go 8-4 next year, and you go, wow, that is a massive turnaround, and he gets hired away like we know is going to happen. What value does Colorado bring to your conference overall? Colorado has been the worst team in the Pac-12, and that's with a really bad Arizona team that's been there, you know? And so I don't know exactly how people feel about whether or not – would you miss Colorado, Utah fans? Would you miss that quote-unquote rivalry that you know is horse crap, that's not a real rivalry? You wouldn't. Well, you don't look forward to that game. It's a place filler.
Where do these teams go? So you just go, you have the haves and the have not.
Well, but that's what I think that you need to have. No, it's and the Big 12 needs to be very
drop teams. You just,
but the Big 12 has to be very specific about who it adds to. Don't just add teams to add teams. Pac-12, don't just add San Diego State just because you go, we got to put some more numbers in here so we can, because the name 12 is in our conference name. Don't just add teams because you think there might be value there. If there is. If you love that partnership, and I think that, frankly, if you were going to trade a couple teams, I think San Diego State would probably be a better pickup than having Colorado in your conference, to be quite honest.
Ooh, wow.
Well, I mean, think about it. This was a basketball team in the national championship game last.
Yeah, but that's once in a blue moon.
But it's also a basketball town.
With San Diego State's a basketball town?
Jeremy covers the Mountain West. Jeremy?
They're pretty good, yeah.
Yes.
Ever heard of Steve Fisher?
And in comparison to their football, the people that their fans that are coming out for football.
Well, who's
the
better talent, Marshall Faulk or Kawhi Leonard?
Now, I agree, Marshall Faulk. You can't just throw out the best player in the history of their program.
Well, yeah.
Which one's better?
Well, I mean, Jeremy's throwing out Kawhi Leonard on me.
No, I know,
so
but
I
I'm saying
counter
from
him with someone that's pretty good.
No. But I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about if San Diego State fans are being real about it. They come out for their basketball games way more than they come out for their football games.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying here. Okay,
I'm saying get rid of Colorado.
That's all.
Well, no, but Joel Klatt brought it up, and I thought. But also, don't just add Colorado Big 12 because somebody goes, somebody else's trash does not mean it's your treasure. And yes, I just called Colorado back the Pac-12 trash, but I'm telling you,
I don't think today Colorado is the worst program in the Pac-12.
Who is?
Stanford, Cal. They're the bottom of the barrel. They're the bottom of the barrel.
I think the history helps Stanford, obviously, and the name helps Stanford. Same thing with Cal to a lesser degree.
They can't survive in today's college football unless they change. They're just not going to survive.
Yeah, you hope they do.
They're not going
to
survive.
I don't think Troy Taylor's the answer to changing any of that either. All right. Let's take a break. I was just saying, don't just add teams just for the sake of adding. I really liked what Joel Klatt said because I think people do need to be smarter about just whether or not you just want to add teams. The SEC is not just going to add teams. Well, they could drop teams and they would be more valuable. Okay, I guarantee it.
I know, but there's only so many teams. So you have to get
Mizzou and drop Vanderbilt.
Well, I know, but in these conferences, you have to go, we're going to get rid of the dead weight, but we're going to bring in good weight. And I don't know that 3, 4, or 5 conferences there's not enough teams for these conferences to have just really good teams in their conference.
I see what you're saying.
I think you only need to have 2 or 3 conferences, period.
So just – well, that's what I'm saying too, that, but with the two or three –
I mean, you're going to drop most of the Big 12 if you get rid of –
I think that it's going to go to the super conferences. But when they make super conferences, Scott, they have to really be super, not just big.
No Colorado. Super conferences without Colorado.
Well, no, but Colorado is that team in the Pac-12 that you look at and you go, what have you done for us ever? And I think Vanderbilt's that kind of a team. I know there's some great academics there, but you think that's really what the SEC cares about? Or do you think they look and they go, well, Vandy does have a really good baseball program? No. So,
I mean, is Minnesota, is Indiana, is Nebraska?
Should all be on the table. And really, regionally, does it make sense? Does it make sense that you bring those teams in? Would Nebraska fit better out west than it would in the Big Ten? Probably. You could add Nebraska.
I don't think Mississippi State. I don't think Ole Miss. I don't think any of those schools down there move the needle. They're not that good. They're not good programs. Fine, they have people that show up, but they're not good programs.
Yeah,
they don't ever do anything.
I just say beware of just adding programs for the sake of adding programs. And so, if we're going to go to super conferences, if they do it, they're going to be real specific about who's going to be in there and who's not. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we have ourselves a little discussion here around the corner. I do want to bring something up that's been getting me. I told you, Scott, I didn't put it in the rundown. I'm just going to run it past you and see what you think about it.
Uh-oh.
Okay? So stay with us. More to go. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. I've got a question here for you, Scott, before we get into our next topic here. Although, we do have something else to do. It's a Win Ticket Wednesday.
What?
Is this serious? Is this a five-pack of tickets? Okay. Family five-pack of tickets to Real Salt Lake versus the LA Galaxy. In Sandy, of course. The U.S. Open Cup. That's on June 7th, so that's next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, Real Salt Lake versus the LA Galaxy. You can check it out on our Win Ticket Wednesday. You can be caller number 12 right now and win a pack of five tickets to Real Salt Lake and the LA Galaxy. 801-575-ZONE. That's 801-575-ZONE. 801-575-9663. Caller number 12. That's awesome. Five pack of tickets. At that point, you're going, I got to start bringing everybody here. And in my case, it'll get half of my family there. So there you go. I want to ask you something, Scott, because I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought, if you could start over and you could choose where you were born and what fandom you had, think about it.
I was born?
Not really where you were born, but I'm saying like where, you know, you grew up, and in your case, you cheered for BYU quite a bit through your youth.
Yeah.
And then when you ended up going to school, you went to the University of Utah, so that allegiance flipped, obviously. But, like, I grew up in a couple different places, and so I cheered for teams, you know, kind of that were there locally. And it was never really a good payoff. You know, like, growing up going to Mavericks games when I was a kid, you know, when I was between the age of, like, 10 and 15, I was like, this team sucks. They were terrible. Now, the Cowboys won a lot of games, but I didn't really root for the Cowboys. My parents weren't Cowboys fans. I didn't grow up with that. But if you could choose and say, you know what would actually pay off all the time to be this fan of this group. Now, my kids have had the benefit of bandwagon jumping their entire freaking lives. And I think that's part of a generational thing. Guys like Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, they do the same thing. They go, I'm a Lakers fan now. Why? Because they won a bunch of titles. Well, great. You know?
You know, so, that sounds shallow, by the way.
Of course it does. Yeah.
But because being a fan is, you're there all the time.
Right. And
you're there through the good, the bad, the whole thing. That's being a fan.
But you know when you, there are teams that we hate. Like, I've just never been a Yankees fan. I've never been a Lakers fan. But there are some teams you look at and you go, man, that'd be fun to be a fan of X team. What team would it be that you could say that would be awesome to have grown up?
So you're saying grow up in that area?
Yeah, cheer for that fan group or cheer for that team. You're a part of it, not necessarily just because it wins, but because of the history of it and all that.
The Joe Montana era 49ers.
Okay.
The Roger Staubach era Dallas Cowboys.
Okay.
Kind of, and I'll tell you where I would have loved to have been in Florida growing up.
In the early 70s?
And have been a Miami Dolphins
fan. Yeah, good time to cheer for them.
I would have loved to have grown up in Miami, cheered for the Dolphins early on, cheered for Dan Marino, and then actually have been, like that's where I ended
up. That's where you ended up.
And I love that. I love playing for the Miami Dolphins. I wished I could have played my whole career there.
Did 4 years there, right?
Mm-hmm. But it would have been really cool to grow up with your team and your heroes and all that stuff, and then actually go on and played for that team. That would be cool. That'd be way cool.
So
Tom Brady kind of grew up a 49ers fan, and he really and felt jilted, you know, by the local team.
I hate these guys, but when I know people who are from Ohio, and there's a lot of jealousy for me for people who are Ohio State fans.
Oh, yeah?
Like, think about how amazing the horseshoe is. You played there. Think about how big of a situation Big Ten football is. And not just Big Ten football, top of the table Big Ten football.
Yeah.
Awesome. You think about, like, historically your Penn States, your Michigans, your Ohio States, even Michigan State to a degree.
I'm not sure there's anything better than a whiteout game in Happy Valley.
Oh, at Penn State? Yeah, that would be something. Yeah, My
agent actually.
What do they call that? Beaver State? Is that Beaver Stadium? What they call Penn State?
I think so.
Yeah,
my agent is he's had a lot of Penn State guys through the years, and there's something different about Penn State guys. There's a different, you know. I don't know.
They're like trained better. They're like brought up well.
Kind of.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, better human beings. I'm not joking.
I can see that.
They're just in fact two former Penn State guys work for him now.
I think they're
just quality people.
Yeah, and I think that if we really were being honest with ourselves, the fan bases we hate the most are the ones that have had so much success, and they're just so dang arrogant because they're so good. You know, and Alabama fans, you know, like they grew up going, I am a Crimson Tide fan, and they've been good forever.
Yeah, I would have loved to have played at USC when they're good.
USC would be a fun team to cheer from.
Ohio State would be a great team to be a part of. And really, like Miami when they were good.
By the way,
University of Miami.
These are all teams that, like, if you ask me and you say, did you say you liked Ohio State? I'd say, no, I hate them. I will deny all this. But there's a secret part of me that goes, I think it would be such a cool thing to grow up being, you said a USC fan. I know exactly, I can't stand a USC fan. But you know what? If you grew up in L.A. and you're like, I'm a Dodger fan, I'm a USC fan, that's
baseball,
pretty hard.
That's a pretty whole hard. Different.
I know.
I was a huge Dodgers fan growing up.
But I mean, like, that would be, and I couldn't be.
And
I just wasn't.
I love the Dodgers.
I couldn't, and I can't, and I don't like the Dodgers generally.
Actually, secretly, I like the Yankees. I've kind of been a Yankees fan, too. It's like the Dodgers and the Yankees. I know it's kind of weird.
You're an unlikable person now.
Pretty much.
You've become that guy. I think there are some places where
the Braves,
they get so lucky.
The Braves.
They get so lucky to be in that spot. Yeah. I mean, even Michigan fans, you grow up in Michigan, but then again, there are always the teams that are bad that are around you that you end up having to cheer for during even stretches of time. When I was growing up, I think Alabama they went through a moment where they weren't great. You know, Gene Stallings didn't have fantastic years every year, but you think about Paul Bear Bryant to
did Mike Shula coach at Alabama?
I think he may have for
a hot second.
Didn't
he coach for
a
few minutes?
Yeah,
at
right before Saban, probably when Saban was at LSU. Is that that time frame? I don't know.
I'll tell you, Shula loved Alabama guys. They drafted a lot of Alabama guys through the years. David played, or Mike played at Alabama.
Mike Shula played at Alabama, yes. Yeah. But I don't remember if he coached there or not. Did he? How long?
4 years and preceded Saban.
Yeah, see, it was 03 to 06.
And took over for the Dennis Franchione.
Oh, Franchione, that's a forgotten time, isn't it? You just assume it goes from.
How about Mike, Price?
I know.
Mike, wasn't he at Auburn? No, he went to Alabama,
he
too,
He went
right?
to Alabama, but he never coached
he
there,
never
right?
coached.
He never got to coach there. Best thing that ever happened to UTEP's football program was Mike Leach going to the strip club down in Tuscaloosa.
End up in UTEP?
Yeah, he went to Mike. Didn't Mike Price go to UTEP for
he
like.
He said Leach, Coach Leach.
Oh, sorry. No, Mike Leach went to UTEP right after that because it was like,
Mike Leach or Mike Price?
Sorry, Mike Price. But I thought about both of them because Mike Leach and Mike Price both were at Wazoo for a minute. And the Mike Price that I knew.
Mike Price
growing
was
up,
at Weber State.
Yeah, and he was the head coach at Wazoo when Ryan Leaf went to the Rose Bowl. Anyway, bottom line is this: Alabama. If you grew up an Alabama fan, like boy, how lucky would you be? Yeah. Right? It's just amazing.
I think it would be fun to play for Bear Bryant.
Yeah,
some of these old time coaches mm-hmm. that would have been an experience.
Mike Shula and Dabo Sweeney played at the same time at Alabama. By the way, pretty crazy.
Did they really?
Yeah. He was Mike Shula was drafted in the NFL, 12th round.
For a hot minute.
Yeah, 12th round.
Because Mike started coaching when I got drafted.
Yeah, I think he was there.
He was in the front office when.
Yeah, he was drafted in 87, so he would have been out of the league pretty much immediately and then working for Dad. All right. Boy, where'd the time go? I had that in my head. Well, I was just thinking, you know. If I had my druthers, like you're just born into the fandoms that you're born into sometimes.
Right.
Right? And you just go.
You go, oh, this is the team I got.
This is my team. This is the team that I, you know, I, my
like
parents.
Like imagine being an Indiana football fan. I mean, there's just not a lot.
Yeah. And you know, my dad taught me to be a Washington Huskies fan when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And that was a great program to follow. Don James, you can't, like that's an awesome stadium. It's an awesome group of fans. The colors leave a little bit to be desired, but you end up liking the purple at some point. And, yeah, they went to Rose Bowls, man, and they won national championships
when I
was a kid.
If you're a Utah fan and you've been around for some time, that's got to have a feel-good to it.
Oh, it came around, man.
Yeah. And BYU, you could argue, maybe went a different direction. I mean, Lavelle Edwards in that era, that was a special time. I mean, there's some amazing, amazing players came through BYU.
You know who the most
amazing
long-
guys.
Yes.
And then it kind of went into – into independence and it's
thanks
it,
Bronco you really and, made and us love been, football
well and that's hard you know
I know
it's really hard as a fan to kind of go from being the haves to the have-nots and then
well let me tell you the, I think the fan group that it paid off the most that you stuck with them for years it's got it the a number one's got to be New England right where it's
yeah.
just like you were garbage
like
for
never,
decades
they
man.
Never won
right
well they did go to a Super Bowl
they though. Did but they got beat 46 to 10 by the
yeah.
Bears like
yeah they
that
were,
was
they'd lost before the game started.
So I think that
what
there are.
What will the Celtics do with Jaylen Brown?
Oh boy, mm-hmm. Scott just saw something on TV. Mm-hmm. He's starting to get. Oh.
Wojo is
no, it's yeah. Windhorse. That's oh. Brian Windhorse. Yeah, yeah. Now they're talking about it. I don't know. As soon as the more days you removed from
they
that, that
something
than that
on.
Game 7 defeat, maybe Jaylen Brown starts to go visit some friends. Maybe he gets a text or two from Danny Ainge. You think Danny Ainge didn't text him and go? Love to have you out in Salt Lake City. Or can you not even do that? Is that tampering?
I'm sure there's tampering issues. Yeah.
He just sends him a skiing brochure, maybe? Hey, I'd love to have you hang out here. That has nothing to do with... No, we're friends. We've been longtime friends. So, I just wanted to see if you wanted to come to my
all these
ski
people,
chalet.
Well, no, all these people hang out somewhere, right? Remember Matt Stafford was in Cabo?
And, oh, yeah, yeah, and, yeah. That's where
Ryan
Sean
Seacrest
McVay. Yeah,
came
yeah.
Down to
Ryan
see.
Seacrest came down and asked him if he wanted to play. Hey, do you play football? Yeah, I'm Matt Stafford. Oh, cool. I was just seeing if you liked it.
Maybe
you like LA? I'm just asking general questions.
I mean, compared to Detroit, right? You'd rather be in
of
LA.
Of course. Of course.
Maybe there's no rules. Like, if you're in another country, you know.
Oh,
you,
there you go.
Like, if you're in Mexico,
yeah. If you're in
you
Mexico,
can have a conversation.
Hey, let's meet in Germany. And we'll have like a G20 summit, but with all the best players. Where do you want to play? We can talk about it here. Doesn't matter. All right, we'll come back. We've got more to go around the corner. I do have this this list here. What's the one game that is must win, have to win on the football schedules for BYU and Utah? I'll throw out some of those schedules, and you go, if I can have this one, that's the one you have to get. You have to have that one. Stay with us, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby! You'll know exactly.
More or less.
What's going to happen? This is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Coming up in about 15 minutes here, right here on Unrivaled, you're going to get Mitch Harper, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, going to join us. Mitch is going to kind of jump into a little bit of the conversation of if you saw some of the criticism of whether or not some of these athletes at BYU were getting exactly what was promised out of their NIL deals. We'll kind of ask him what the deal is with that and kind of where the players are at with that, if it's a couple of disgruntled players, if it's kind of the whole feeling of the team. I don't want to see what that's about. But Mitch will give us some clarity on that one in just a few moments. What are the odds, Scott? Goes like this. I give you a scenario. You give me a 0 to 100% chance that thing will or will not happen. And then you get yourself a bonus number of fake points for giving me a jersey number that's associated with that. By the way, all of our What Are the Odds today brought to you by the folks at the Larry H. Miller Utah Summer Games. Registration now open for the Larry H. Miller Utah Summer Games in Cedar City. Join nearly 10,000 athletes, all ages and abilities, competing over 40 different events this June. Register now, utahsummergames.org. That's utahsummergames.org. You can participate down there in Cedar City. Scott, what are the odds that the Big 12 adds at least one team in the next, I don't know, should we give a little time frame to it? July 1 is when they have to really kind of do it, right?
That's when those buyouts and extra money come into play.
UConn, blah. Don't you want to die hearing that name tied to the Big 12? Gonzaga, or as they say up in Washington, Gonzaga.
Is that what they say?
Oh, yeah. Yep. They'll go, oh, yeah, will you hand me that plastic bag?
So they say Gonzaga?
They say Gonzaga. It's not Gonzaga.
Do they call them the Zags or the Zags?
No, it's the Zags. It's weird.
But do they call them the Zags?
They call them the Zags.
But
they say Gonzaga.
Gonzaga.
What you don't hear somebody from anywhere near Gonzaga's program is somebody saying Gonzaga. If somebody says to you Nevada.
Gonzaga.
Right. If somebody says to you Nevada or Gonzaga, they are from out east. Okay? You just know that. Or Colorado. So Gonzaga, UConn, or Colorado getting added to the Big 12. What are the odds?
I don't like any of those schools.
Me neither.
To the Big 12. So I'm going to say.
I'm off this thing of just adding schools.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. In lieu of Joe Namath's 80th birthday, a Joe Namath 12% chance that any of those schools are going to be added to the Big 12. 12, 12. Get it? Joe Namath, 80.
Joe Namath 80% or Joe Namath 12?
Joe Namath 12 on his 80.
But he's
80.
On his 80. Yeah,
to the Big 12.
Mm.
But then it's 13, so I'd probably have to go with like Dan Marino or something like that.
Let me see here. I'm going to go even lower because I hate any of those pickups. And Gonzaga would only be a basketball school, right? I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And Colorado, I told you, just to add schools and to do it just to spite the Pac-12, I also hate that idea. So I'm going to go even lower. I'm going to go with a Rick Meyer 3% chance.
Wow. Notre Dame legend.
Former Seahawk, too.
Yeah, he was.
What are the odds that Jaylen Brown isn't with the Celtics? I'm not talking about going to the Jazz. I'm just going to say not a Celtic next year.
Oh, well, if he's not a Celtic, he's going to be at the Jazz. I mean, that's just
if he's not a Celtic, he's not getting paid, man.
Well, he'll get paid. I think this is high. I'm going to say, I think, was he 76? I'm going to go, is Curly Cope? 76. I don't know why I remember all the Houston Oilers.
I was going to say.
I'm going to go Mike Barber, 86%. Mike Barber was a tight end.
Give me somebody we know, dude.
Well, just look at it. He knows them. Okay. He should.
Jeremy?
I mean, Jeremy's
you don't know those guys.
Or Moore Boone, Chris Dishman, yeah. Earl Campbell.
Okay.
Earl Campbell, 33, 34.
So,
Hayward Jeffries, I think, was 88.
The team that Earl Campbell played on had a tight 1%. End named Mike Barber, who blocked for him quite a bit.
I know Mike Munchak.
No, these are after.
Okay.
You got to know your Houston Oilers history.
No, hey, jeez. Jeremy, no, you don't. Because they're not a team anymore. They're not a team anymore.
They were.
They're technically still a team. They were. Tennessee Titans owned all the Oilers stuff.
They were my team. They were my team growing up. So
you know very well they don't exist anymore.
86% chance. Why? Just because I want to say Mike Barber. So there.
I'm going to give it a.
I go Dave Sloan.
The Jaylen Brown's not with the Celtics. I'm going to go even lower. I'm going to go with a, ooh, who could I get with that one? I'll give it a LeBron 6% chance.
Negative Nancy.
Yeah, it's not I'm being negative.
Doubting Debbie.
No, I'm not. All I'm doing is doubting Debbie. What is that, like a weird saint? There's Debbie Downer.
Debbie Downer.
Right, who rolls up with the rain cloud over.
There's also a Doubting Debbie.
Doubting Debbie.
Actually, it's Doubting Thomas.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm gonna go with the 6% LeBron. Not happening. Okay, let's take a break. I still have the game in my head. I know exactly which game for BYU they have to win. Scott, have you picked out the game that Utah has to win?
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Don't reveal it yet. Okay, we'll come back to that.
Weber State.
shoot, you just wasted it. Mitch Harper's gonna join us next. So stay right here with us. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. So.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, and you. Thanks for participating in the program. Hey, any of our show you can find via podcast in any of the places you download your podcast from. So there's that, and you can also go over to kslsports.com and click the podcast button and find the shows. Segment by segment, we break this thing down. It's a great way to catch up on what we were talking about today. And you can also download the KSL Sports app, stream the show all day long with that. Joining us right now on the program, speaking of KSLSports.com, he is our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, host of Cougar Sports Saturday. He does the Cougar Tracks podcast, among so many other things. Mitch Harper joining us on the program. What's going on, Mitch?
Not much, guys. Happy to be on with you. It was kind of fun today to see the TV kickoff times and kick times released. It's feeling... more real for BYU that they're going to be, you know, part of this Big 12 and kind of see, you know, what this is going to look like. So it was another kind of mile marker in the off season, the countdown to football.
So it's exciting to see the times. What did you think of the times? What do you like about them? Don't like?
Well, I think it showed in week one, you know, BYU plays a late night game against Sam Houston. It's a nice little, you know, kind of preview for the Big 12 to test that fourth late night window with the central time zone viewer, because Sam Houston's based out of Texas. And I think that's, again, the power of BYU being in the West. And I just, this area of the country, you know, teams in this part of the region, it's not ideal for the fans per se having those late night games. But if you want to be on linear television instead of just a streaming platform, that fourth window can be valuable. And that was the case with BYU and Sam Houston going on FS1 and, you know, BYU getting a prime time slot in week three against Arkansas, I thought was quite noteworthy. And I think also too, you know, week two, BYU plays Southern Utah, the game that would always been a BYU TV game. That's now going to a streamer with ESPN Plus and Big 12 Now. And, you know, the expectation with all of that, because I know Cougar fans have been wondering what's going on with BYU TV and all that. I would expect that it's going to be, you know, the same broadcasters that you've grown used to with BYU TV. It's just going to be packaged on the ESPN Plus platform. And You know, I think BYU will probably have a, you know, a good production value there because it's all in-house production with those Big 12 teams. So, but it's, you know, exciting for BYU to get closer to the season, get those kick times and see some prime time spots.
Mitch, one of the things that we've kind of been watching too is this July 1 time frame to where some teams could get added. Is the Big 12 really interested in adding teams? And when you see these names that are out there, your UConn's, Gonzaga for basketball, I know you haven't been a huge fan of that idea. Colorado, of course, gets thrown out there because, you know, they feel confident enough. I have no idea why to be like, yeah, we're going to look out for the best for us. I don't know. And then I think Memphis was the most recent rumor, and a lot of them are just rumors. So is there any sort of validity? Is the Big 12 really that interested to add teams for the sake of just adding teams?
That would be the wrong move, and you'd have to think that if that's the case, you know, Brett Yormark, maybe his lack of college experience would be shining through if that was the approach. I don't think it's that way. I you know, Colorado should leave the Pac-12 yesterday. I mean, they would be a great fit in the Big 12, and, I mean, there's history there dating back to their days in the Big 7. I don't know what they're waiting for unless they know something that none of us know about a lucrative TV deal from the Pac. They should move on and head on to the Big 12, where the markets that are in the Big 12 will actually maybe have an interest in going to games to Boulder and actually show up and maybe make an atmosphere again at Folsom Stadium. So Colorado absolutely should go. You know, these teams like Memphis, I think that's a dud. I don't think that, you know, I mean, they've got good basketball. And that's the thing that's interesting with Yormark is that, you know, he clearly wants basketball, separate media rights entity. Maybe after 2031, they position this league to be just this, you know, big moneymaker on the basketball side. Because with the NCAA tournament likely expanding to 90-plus teams in a few years, you know, Big 12, if you expand with UConn and Memphis and Gonzaga, those teams are going to probably be in the big dance. You're looking at, what, 13, or, you know, to 10, 12 teams in the NCAA tournament. That's going to be NCAA tournament units, which is money. And, you know, TV properties are going to like, you know, those college basketball matchups in the season. But, you know, I still think you got to have a lot of focus on football, in my opinion, because I feel like college basketball does not, you know, move the national, you know, revenue needle like it once did. I think football's still got to be the big driver. That's why I think Colorado, all eyes on the Pac-12 team, should be the focus right now. And then maybe see what you can do in 2031 when your next media rights are up, potentially with the ACC, if, you know, because they still got a long deal with 2036. But I don't think they should jump the gun with anyone like Gonzaga or Memphis at the moment.
Joe Klatt had an article about, well, I'm not going to ask you that question. I'll ask you a different one. I might ask that question in a minute. But
sounds controversial, yeah.
So looking at BYU's schedule this year in football, what is the, we're going to have a discussion about this at some time, but I'm curious to get your thoughts, Mitch. What is the game this year that's like a must-win game for BYU on that schedule?
Week 4 against Kansas. I think that is the must-win. Because Kansas is much improved, but still, their talent is they're not deep. They've got a good starting 11 on offense. They're explosive on the offensive side. Kansas in the trenches defensively, though, BYU's O-line should be able to, I think, outclass Kansas in the trenches. I think that's a game, maybe from what you get, maybe you're buying in a little bit to the logo on the helmet and the perception of Kansas football, but to me, that's a must-win, and I think if you do win that, it's a real tone-setter for BYU to maybe have a chance starting 2-0 in conference play with Cincinnati the following week. So I think that Kansas game, to me, is a must-win, and it could really be a narrative opportunity for BYU. Like, you know, you come into the Big 12, it's a competitive league, but BYU's ready to compete. And I think so that one, to me, is the one I look at and say that is the must-win that BYU needs to get.
Mitch Harper joining us here on Unrivaled as we kind of move through some of what the college football landscape looks like in the offseason and then getting toward that Big 12 moment. I look at some of the things that BYU is, you know, just gearing up for and how excited the program is. You know, everybody surrounding the program is about this official join on July 1. So we were looking at these lists and we were looking at the ones that are must-win games for BYU. And I toggle between, I think, fans, because the more we're removed from actual football, Mitch, I think we convince ourselves that BYU will be better than they probably should be, or worse. So which one is it for you? Like, have you built over time this idea of, no, I actually like more and more what BYU's chances are, or do you look at it and go, man, this is getting more and more difficult?
I like what BYU has done in the transfer portal. They got a top 25 transfer portal class. The portal's pretty much dried up. So we're kind of getting some finality when it comes to that. And that movement is really simmering down as these coaching staffs now shift to summer camp season coming up in June. So it feels like the rosters are coming into place. And I feel like what BYU's done, I'm actually putting together my transfer portal recap from the Big 12. And I feel like BYU sits quite nicely with what they've done. I feel like they, you know, they got some core pieces with, you know, obviously Keaton Slovis is a notable one, but I feel like Aiden Robbins at running back was a real difference maker. I think he's going to come in and be an instant impact guy, not only for BYU, but potentially the Big 12 Conference. He's really good, and he's going to be a perfect fit in BYU's, you know, wide zone scheme, I think, of the running back position. I think also the O-line is a lot better, too. You know, I said that last week with you guys, but I feel like that's given me reason for optimism there. And I think, too, that BYU, I think, has a better coaching staff as well. You know, it's interesting with BYU, it takes – things take time. You know, teams – things – you know, we see that. We hear that all the time when it comes to BYU. Things take time. Well, it took Kalani 8 years to get the staff that really he maybe dreamed of when he took this job. He had to sort through Ty and kind of being, you know, told you're going to have him as the offensive coordinator, and then he was left with nothing much else. Now he's got career-minded Power 5 coaches dotting his entire staff. They're relentless on the recruiting trail. And I think that alone gives you a little bit more reason for optimism that they could be a surprise or a spoiler. I still think on the high end, 7 wins is probably the highest I would be willing to say for this team. But I just think that BYU, there's not many games where they're going to be completely outclassed. I think the only game that I would look at and say BYU is going to be a, you know, probably 3-touchdown underdog would probably be Texas. Everything else, you would feel like, you know, there could be a shot that BYU is, you know, pulls the upset here, or they could, you know, string it, you know, be very competitive at a minimum. So I think that those things, you know, give BYU reason for optimism heading in. And I think there is also a case of, you know, Keaton Slovis has really taken the mantle of being a leader of the team. You know, last week he was at the service project with the NIL collected that BYU has, and they were with a bunch of players. Cody Epps was there, and just he's the leader of the team. And that's been something that's been a surprise that I didn't expect to happen so soon. But I think it's tangible. And I think he's really embraced everything about BYU. It almost feels like he's been a guy that's been around here for so long. And when you talk to him and you hear what he's saying about BYU. So all of that combined, I feel like that's what's created maybe a feeling that they could be a little bit better than many would say they could be.
Yeah, it's a good point about that staff. Just gets better and better. So there's an article that showed up in the Salt Lake Tribune about over-promising, under-delivering on some NIL deals. How much of that is it? Do you hear about at BYU? Is it an accurate statement? Is it what's kind of the feedback? Because I don't know that anyone really knows, or do they?
Well, I think a lot of that, you know, was summed up by this, the fact of BYU athletes didn't get their cut of the Cougar Tail Built Bar box deal. And, you know, I'm someone who follows all the promoting of stuff these players and coaches and brands are doing in regards to BYU NIL. And outside of the first 5 days from my tracking, I wasn't seeing much promotion on that. And when you drill it down, it's, you know, being talked about over $180. I don't know how big of a deal that really is. You know, the Yokavu thing with the NFTs, you know, that from the get-go seemed like it was dead in the water at the moment that it was announced, because NFTs were, you know, it kind of seemed like they were an afterthought. I mean, I'm not going to be an expert on NFTs by any stretch, but it seemed like that was already behind the eight ball. And you look at some of the prices of what some of the NFTs cost, you go, I don't know if I want to spend $10,000 on this Isaac Rex 18-yard catch that's a highlight video. I don't know, like, the concept of how that, you know, equals into a massive value. I mean, whoever did, hopefully those players are getting that cut, and that's where you do hope that there is, they're getting their rightful share. But You know, the Built Bar thing, you know, there's another entity coming into the mix for BYU. Feast Box has been a player that's kind of emerged as another team-wide sort of deal coming up this fall for BYU. I think that there, you probably poke at a lot of programs, say there's been these, you know, grand, you're going to be making all this tons of money in NIL. But I think, I just think that BYU has done a pretty good job with so far with their NIL. I mean, some of these, I can't speak for all these certain companies, what they're exactly promising these players, but for the most part, sounds like the walk-ons that have been invested into that Built Bar deal, they got their share. Scholarship players have got their $1,000. That was the core essence of the Built Bar deal, and that's been, you know, been delivered. It's that cougar tail, you know, fee or whatever, the share from that,
sure,
that they haven't got. So I think that BYU's in an okay spot with NIL. I don't think they're ever going to be a leader in the space when it comes to delivering massive amounts of dollars, but I think they've been, you know, pretty solid in their kind of unique approach of trying to find ways that can maybe give a cut to pretty much everyone on the team.
It seems like a space that's so complicated already that, you know, understanding even what the deals are on paper, we look at it and go, oh, it's just cut and dry like this. And the reality is that these deals might be a little bit more convoluted than we may have thought from, you know, beforehand. Or, you know, I don't know what the contract looks like with these guys exactly. Yeah. And when you make these announcements and you go, yeah, we're planning to do X, Y, and Z, these players are required to do something as well on top of it. And so some of it, I don't know if it was players who had left. It was some sour grapes with all that. But, you know, it seems like it's such a hard space to regulate, because then you look at it and you go, so what's the reality here? Is somebody being shorted here, or is a program being maligned or a company being maligned when they shouldn't be? That's the part where I think it just points to a regulatory body that we do not have right now in the NIL space, and just the need that there is to be able to get somebody out there and doing the right thing and making sure they're looking out for the institution, these companies, and the kids.
Yeah, and I think also, too, it's just another example that I think there needs to maybe stop having sometimes the kid gloves when it comes to covering, you know, college athletes. This is becoming more and more business. We're going to see more talk about, you know, people getting upset over certain deals and certain, like, let's have more transparency when it comes to injury reports. Let's have conference-wide injury reports. If we want to continue to shift more where people are getting hand-wringing over these certain deals, well, let's continue to make it more of a business, because you continue to open up these can of worms and mediums like this, you start to go more in on the players. I think everyone starts to, you know, when it comes to college sports, I think a lot of people look at it from the thought of, it's kind of an unwritten rule where you focus more on the coaching staff. You put blame when there's blame to be had on the staff or maybe administration, never on the players specifically as a collective whole. Yes. But now it's like, if it continues to shift more and more, then, you know, you start to then start placing blame. Cause I think a lot of college staffs, they kind of cover this. They always kind of like to, err on the side of caution and always have like avoiding answers when it comes to personnel and injuries with players because they're kids. That's what it's brought up. But then on the flip side, there's this hand wringing over this dollar, this money. It's like, well, if we want to make this completely a full-blown business, like we already know it is, but like let's just call it what it is, well, then it kind of changes the whole dynamic of how we view these players going forward, I think, in the future.
Well, okay, then if you want to take the kid gloves off, Nick Saban says hire them, make them employees. Do you like that idea?
Sorry, cut out a little bit there.
I thought it was a full-on, very rare Mitch Harper comment.
Yeah, he's like speechless. Wow. It's like, well, ask him a question.
No.
What I was saying.
What was that?
What I was saying is, you talk about taking the kid gloves off, then, and treating these athletes different. Nick Saban has come out and actually said, I don't have a problem having these players become employees.
Yeah, and I think honestly, guys, you kind of wonder too, and I'm just kind of on this thought here, just kind of spitballing here, but I think that, you know, with conference realignment and the chase for TV dollars and revenue and having all that necessary money, I mean, is that the next phase of this sport where you're trying to identify the conferences that are willing to get to that point to avoid potential antitrust lawsuits, which leagues are willing to really embrace that game. And maybe, you know, maybe this is the indirect way that the Big 12 is showing they want to eventually, you know, have enough resources and capital to play that game. And, you know, we know that the SEC is seems like they're willing to do that. The Big Ten, when their previous commissioner, Kevin Warren, he was even telling HBO that, you know, we're going to get to a point where college athletes are, you know, becoming employees and making a cut of these media rights deals. And, you know, maybe that's the next chapter in all of this. It is interesting because, and I think that the NIL space too is a lot better than I think that it sometimes gets painted as. I mean, I think that NIL is often looked at as this, just this nasty thing that, you know, players are demanding this. I think that, you know, a lot of it more so, at least from the guys that I've interacted with on the BYU beat, they're not becoming millionaires. None of these guys are making these lucrative deals. A lot of, like, even Malik Moore told me, I'm getting enough money to, you know, pay my, get my groceries that I want at home in my apartment and things like that. It's nothing groundbreaking, but it's enough to maybe cover some loose ends in their personal lives. But there's more money to be had for sure. As we get more knowledge and intel and education on NIL and maybe the pros and cons of what works and what doesn't. And eventually there could come a day with paying the athletes and making them employees. I'm honestly not against that at this point, because then it becomes a little bit more, a little bit more of a situation where it's kind of like pro sports. Like, it just feels like we're kind of blurring the lines a little bit at the moment, where parts of the sport is definitely kind of feeling pro. Other aspects, we're still trying to maintain the collegial, you know, historical, you know, aspect of college sports and amateurism. I don't know. It's a fascinating thing, and maybe that is the next iteration that we do see down the road with after the 12-team playoff, era concludes.
Mitch Harper joining us on the program. Mitch, we threw past Jeremiah Jensen the idea of a Airbnb where the entire KSL sports staff that's going down to Texas for the Big 12 Media Day. We would it would basically be like an old school MTV. What was that show?
Real World.
Real World KSL Sports Edition, and we do it. And, like, you know, there's a confession room where it's just like, I don't like Mitch's attitude. I mean, he comes in here and he's like, I'm a BYU expert around here. Like, we need to be able to do something along these lines. In the day we're trying to make content out of everything, we got to all be in one house. And I'd prefer that it was like a 2-bedroom for 7 guys kind of a situation. I'm just saying, I'm spitballing here. I'm throwing it out there. But our Airbnb down in Arlington is catching a little bit of steam.
I like that idea, and I think you're right. When we need to monetize and make content for everything that we're doing, I think that's a great idea, having a real house, real world Big 12 Media Days with KSL Sports. I like that idea.
Let's go.
Our fans don't want to hear this. They really don't.
They're like, I don't know. I just don't like the way that Scott's been treating me. I don't know. Just get a little bit personal. That's the way people want to see it. All right, Mitch, thanks for hanging out, and thanks for the breakdown here. And we're still trying to plan on what holiday we're going to make out of BYU's first day in the Big 12 as well come July. So start thinking about that one as well. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, you bet, guys. Yeah, I think BYU's going to have a fan fest. Don't know the location yet, but they're going to – it should be Big 12 days coming up sooner than we think.
It. All right, let's do it. Mitch, we'll talk to you again, man. Thanks.
Okay, see ya.
There you go. Let's take a break. We'll come back. When we do, we've got ourselves a couple things to jump into here still. We're gonna grind into this next version of this. The kick times are released, as we were talking about. What those kick times actually are, and the must wins for both Utah and BYU coming up in 2023. Stay with us, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery, with the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right. Hey, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Doing like a little special here on Jimmy Butler on ESPN right now. I'll sit down one-on-one with him. Who has it better than that guy right now? You think about the where the expectations were for the Miami Heat versus, like, everybody. I don't know anybody who hates Jimmy Butler. I'm going to be honest. I actually don't know anybody who goes, dude, I hate that guy. He just seems like he's having so much dang fun. He plays so hard. Why would you hate a guy like that? And he's not on like, you know, the best team. He doesn't have the best role. He doesn't have the best dudes around him. And I'm watching. I'm just like, man, that's. I'm actually. You know, I think that we rolled our eyes at the idea. Could you imagine if the Lakers and Celtics would have won? That's what the NBA kind of on paper would love, right? An LA Boston classic final. But the reality is that. And I know it goes without saying. I know this is kind of a Captain Obvious here, Scott, but the Nuggets and the Heat are the two hottest teams. You don't want to see some team back their way in. A team like Boston, if they would have won that game at home, you wouldn't have thought to yourself, yeah, man, they are so ready after they had dropped three out of their previous four games. After they had dropped, you know, gone down 3-0 and had to fight back from that. And while it would have been historic, I love the idea of a couple of teams that nobody – had on the radar of being the possible NBA champions this year, including the Nuggets, who were, I think Locke, who we're going to talk to in the next 30 minutes, David Locke, was like, this is your number one offense in the league. This is before the season started. He goes, don't be surprised. They'll likely be that number one seed. Their thing is can they play good enough defense? And all season long, they just were the best team in the West. They continued to be that way, and they took care of business in the playoffs. And then you have this underdog amazing story with Miami. I love the finals, man. Yeah,
I'm not sure Miami's an underdog. I just think they're an injured dog, and they've been kind of injured through the year. But what I love is that you just see these players are dialed in, and whatever they do to get there, it shows. It just shows their ability to concentrate. In the clutch moments, in the tough moments, it shows in their ability to close out series. And you see teams that are off for whatever reason. You know, it's whether they're kind of drumming up ghosts from the past and go, oh, here we go again kind of thought process, whatever it might be. Clearly, the teams that just have that mental focus just seem to be the ones who – figure it out and get it done. And that's that. You can just see that in Jimmy Butler. You can see that with Denver. And you just go, who's going to blink first? I mean, really, it's just because it's going to be two teams that really are dialed in and feel like they should win.
I really like the idea of, I just don't hate either of these teams, which is also kind of a bummer. I like hating a team in the finals. You know, that always kind of helps. And it's not even just like that you're a fan of one team, but I do like the hateable stories and the likable stories are equally fun to me.
It's hard to kind of, you know, pick between one of these two teams because they certainly deserve it. I mean, they certainly deserve to win, and a lot of great storylines with both these teams. And so you hope that people can appreciate and give them the respect that they're due because they've deserved to be there.
All right, let's look at some of these schedules. We talked about it a little bit with Mitch Harper, who came on and chatted about some of the times that were announced for BYU. Let's look at some of these kickoff times, not just for BYU, but also for Utah. So the Utah kick times have been announced. You've got your Thursday, August 31, Utah, Florida. Scott, you're going to be on the radio calling that game at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. So you go.
When you get a game like this, and because college football is so subjective, you have a chance to make a first impression. I mean, the schedule comes out, and guess what? It ends up on ESPN. So you're a Utah fan. Across the nation, anyone watching ESPN is going to see Utah's playing early on in the season against Florida. And everyone across, you know, so your impression with folks on the East Coast is really going to happen when you play that early season game against Florida, and then what do you do against USC? And that's what people are going to remember for this Utah team. So that first impression, it's going to be at home. It's going to be electric. It's something that, you know, doesn't happen often for a Florida team. It's a big deal. And really, you know, it's the best game there is on week one in college football. But the significance of it, and I said this a year ago, It's so important because you have limited opportunities to make that impression if you're a team like Utah. You've got to make that impression. And hopefully from a year ago, they learned that, because that whole loss to Florida a year ago, it just drug with the team most of the year. And the fact that they could actually go and win the Pac-12 championship after it was really a gut punch for Utah, who I think had a chance to really go to the college football playoffs a year ago, but they had to win that game. So you've got to make that impression with that first game.
Do you look at this too and go, because we talked about a Thursday game, would you have preferred it a little bit later? And I know that they're trying to have the best of both worlds right here, where you're trying to get Florida, you're trying to get the East Coast to look, because you're talking about, if this isn't the very first game of the college football season, it's certainly going to be the most important one. You know, this isn't a week zero game technically, but it is probably the biggest matchup that's going to be happening on a Thursday for sure.
Well, and you want this game at this time. You don't want it late at night because you're going to get a viewing audience from the East. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal. The start time is at 6 o'clock. Their television is saying this is important. We value this. This game, it's a big deal. I'm fascinated to see what actually goes down with it. I really am, because it's where Florida really is, where Utah really is. I actually like having to get out of the gates early, and you know, I think Utah typically in its recent Pac-12 history has been a slow starting team. And I just like that they're playing some tough quality opponents early on. I think it helps them out. You know, they got Baylor the next week, and before they get into, you know, they got Weber State, before they get in conference. But it's a tough schedule to start with. But I think it's one that's going to make you more prepared for the season.
Okay, so you got that one on at 6 p.m. It's just nice to have times, right? When you look and you see the times, it feels a little bit real.
Well, yeah.
And then you go, you can imagine exactly what the type of weather is going to be at a 6 o'clock kickoff up on the hill on August 31st. Saturday, September 9th. Now, this one was a gut punch for me, because I hate these games. I have a personal hate for these games. Now, it's going to be
Kyle Whittingham's favorite time.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he loves it.
You get out of bed, wake up, go to the stadium, go play a football game.
It's a 7 a.m. kickoff. It's a 7 a.m. kickoff.
It's old school mindset. And I'm telling you, I have the same mind. I'm with it. I don't want to sit around
the
hotel all day long.
Do the players?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
So it's a 7 a.m. kickoff that morning.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. 10 a.m. Mountain. Kyle's like, I told you I wanted to write.
You're talking about Baylor.
Sorry about Baylor. Yeah. So Baylor at Baylor in Waco. Yeah. That's going to be an 11 a.m. kick in Texas. 10 a.m.
11's
here.
A little early. That'll feel a little weird to everyone.
Well, I know, because here at home it's 10 a.m., man. Yeah. And a game in Texas, honestly, at 11 a.m., that's a little bit early. Like, I'm usually... although I will say, on September 9th, that Waco can be extremely hot.
Going to be humid?
I don't know. I mean,
is it humid?
It's humid, humid, but it's not. Humid, it's not the Houston humid, right?
Okay,
it is
so
going to be hot.
The Florida swamp.
It's not the Florida. Yeah. Did you just cuss? It's not going to be the Florida.
I said Florida.
Oh no! I just thought Jeremy's like,
not the Florida swampy.
Yeah. It's going to be a 10 a.m. Mountain Time kickoff for that Utah Baylor game. I have a hard time.
That's a little weird.
I know. I have a hard time shaking the cobwebs off a little bit and going, okay, I got to get ready for football. Because normally, what do we get? We get all day prepping ourselves for a game.
What is nice is you're going to play two tough games early on, but you're playing Thursday, right? And so you're going to have a couple of extra days for that next
That's actually fantastic for that Baylor game.
Gives you a little bit better chance to kind of get ready, get prepared, get healthy. So you can go. Go play again.
Then another early game. This one, you usually have one, maybe even two, sometimes that are early-ish games at Rice-Eccles Stadium. They're going to be hosting Weber State at noon on Saturday, the 16th of September.
When it's a Pac-12 network game,
you just expect the sun to be right out on top of you.
They have to pick certain games during the season, so they know that a lot of dud games are going to go on their network, because they don't want to get an opportunity like a Utah versus USC later on in the year and go, oh, sorry, we can't play that because we have an obligation. So they're pretty good about picking the right garbage games to kind of fill their quota, so their top games can end up on national television.
It is one of those things where you go, look, what is going to be the best
you need
for us?
To know about the Pac-12 network?
Yeah.
It's garbage.
Huh?
Yeah.
What did Mitch say also? I think that ESPN Plus game that they're going to have with
Sam Houston?
No, NBA? No, Southern Utah. Because Sam Houston's going to be on FS1, I think. Oh. But Southern Utah, the second week of the season, what would normally be slated for a BYU TV game, BYU TV will likely package. They'll be the ones packaging it all up. They'll be the ones that are the production crew for this. But it's going to live on ESPN Plus rather than on BYU TV. I don't hate that. I mean, the reality is, I don't know. You'll get a lot of people who go, I turned it to BYU TV and I didn't see the Cougars. What happened? It's like people nowadays who call up and go, why aren't the Jazz on KSL TV tonight? And you're like, that hasn't been a thing for a while. But, you know, so you kind of got to get used to some of the broadcast situations there. On BYU's kickoff times, you've got yourself the Sam Houston's game is going to be an 8:15 kickoff on FS1. So it's a primetime game week one, okay, on FS1. Week two, like I said, ESPN Plus against Southern Utah. That's a 1 p.m. kickoff at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. And then this one, I like this one a lot. It's on ESPN 2. It's a 5:30. That's a perfect time. A 5:30 kickoff for Arkansas and BYU down in Fayetteville. I love that time. I think that's a great time for you to be able to take that one in. And that game's going to be interesting, too. Another one that was thrown out there also, BYU's first home Big 12 game is going to be against Cincinnati. And that kickoff is 8:15 p.m. on September 29th. So lots of late games. The interesting thing about that for Cincinnati is that's an East Coast time school, and they're coming out to Provo for an 8:15 kickoff in Provo. So far, time-wise, you have that one. I thought for some reason we saw the Kansas one maybe. The Kansas one, was Kansas not put up there? Actually, you know what? I think I saw the Kansas one, and it is I think it's going to be 5 p.m. Mountain. I think since this has been put out, I think they put it back out there again because BYU just sent out the broadcast schedule. Greg Rubel put it out. He's the director of broadcasting on top of being the voice of the Cougs. But my recollection was I think I looked and it was – I want to get it right, though. I want to make sure we get this thing right. Updated football broadcasts. Here we go. And as soon as they happen, as soon as you get them. Now Kansas still TBA. Kansas is still TBA. So there you go. 5:30 in Fayetteville, 8:15 in Provo for Cincinnati. Out there as well. Okay. Scott, you ready to take a break here?
Yeah, it sounds about.
Doesn't that weird? The thing is that I get excited talking about all these games, but then like I get bummed out knowing this is kind of a long way till we're still there. Less than 100 days.
I thought it's like 3 months. You got June, July, August. I mean.
And you're right there. Okay.
Not even 3 months.
Jeremy, what'd you tell me? So you told me something just now. Okay. This portion of the program brought to you by the folks at Mountainland Supply. Locations throughout Utah for all your HVAC, plumbing, waterworks, geotextiles, landscape, agricultural, irrigation needs. Check them out. MountainlandSupply.com. That's MountainlandSupply.com. Okay. We'll come back. When we do, we've got some more things to jump into. So just be aware. We've got stuff still to talk about. Plus, David Locke's going to join us in just a little while. What the SEC is saying about the future of their conference, what it's going to look like with the 12-team college football playoffs. Stay with us, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
Presented by G2G Bars on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Oh, 5 minutes to 5 o'clock. You know what that means? We're just about 10 minutes-ish away from David Locke, voice of the Utah Jazz, joining us here on the program. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just our attitude about it, Scott. I'm not a big fan of someone going, oh, slow news day. No such thing. In the internet era, there was always some stuff to talk about, man. There's always something to jump in on. And the things that I get most excited for in the future of sports, I think a future of two P5 teams here in the state of Utah is awesome, right? BYU going to the Big 12, highly anticipated. Utah making so much noise in the Pac-12 over the past, you know, decade. I love the idea of big-time football here. And it gets even bigger with the 12-team college football playoff. Six automatic qualifiers means you're going to have six who are just like, hey, man, were you good this year? And if you were, we're letting you in, man. And I love the idea of whoever the new Boise State is going to be to break that, to get into there, whoever the new Cincinnati, whoever the new Utah is going to be, right? And those are teams, and those are all teams except for Boise State now. I mean, think about Cincinnati, who's also going to be a P5 team. Utah, who is like, feels like a bona fide, you know, it's like old hat. These guys are Pac-12 champions, man. Two times over.
So is TCU, were they a bowl buster even though they were a Power 5 team last year?
You're talking about this last year? No, they're a P5 team, and the answer is no, but I see what you're saying.
Doesn't it kind of feel like it, though?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what's insane about the Big 12 is think about Baylor winning the Big 12 the year before and then this last year, what, going 6-6 or 7-6 or whatever it was? I mean, that's an insane conference. You don't know what you're going to get with those guys. But it also shows kind of the talent level. But it also shows you, too, that every given year you can have an absolute just widespread weird group of 12 teams in the college football playoff, and I'm for every freaking bit of it. Greg Sankey plays Darth Vader on the weekends. He's you know, when you're the commissioner of the SEC, like, you have power that humans don't have. And he's one of those guys that controls a room. And he controls a narrative. And Greg Sankey said, finally, he's put a seal on it. I love the idea of a 12-team college football playoff. I'd be happy with no automatic qualifiers. That's what he said.
Right. Well, of course he said that.
Just the top 12 ranked teams could make up that playoff. Yeah. Now, he's saying...
It's the only thing I don't like about this.
Because he could go eight SEC teams and then four of whomever else is out there.
But what I don't... Well, of course he's going to try to get as many teams in there. But what I don't like about the one negative for the 12-team playoffs, one negative, it's still subjective because you still are ranked, right? So, yes, there are the six teams that automatic bid. Great. That's really good. But there are also six teams that are subjective. So if you feel like you're a team that can win your conference, so if you're in the big, you're in the Pac-10, you go, look, we think we're Utah. We think we can win the conference. Then you're more likely to schedule tougher games. But if you're a team, you know, goes, yeah, we've got a powerhouse. Maybe Oregon becomes a juggernaut. And it's like, we can't beat Oregon. So then you got to play for like positioning, right? To be one of those top teams in the country, and so it's a different strategy, and that subjectivity, if that's a word.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Unless you're using it in a weird fashion. I want to hear the next part.
No, but if that's the criteria for those other six teams, then sure. you're going to want to have the easiest schedule to get the highest ranking. So
I
don't like
what,
that.
They're about to decide.
There's still an element of that in this, no matter what.
They're about to decide if they're going to have, they're about to make that vote, right, Jeremy? They're about to vote on that 8-9, the 8-9 officially, the 8 or the 9 teams in the schedules. And obviously, if they look at it and they go, dude, even six at large bids, they go, we're playing 8 games, man.
The thing about the SEC,
we're
going to
play
though,
8 teams in our conference because that's one more game we can control ourselves and likely chalk, just to draw it up as a W. I don't know, Jeremy. What do you think the record is of the SEC in their? That could be something we could find. The record of the SEC in their garbage week. What do they call it? They call it garbage week, right? Brought to you by Waste Management.
I call it SoCon week, like everybody else does.
Right. Well, when they play the cream puffs,
Chattanooga,
in the middle of, yes,
those teams.
Mercer.
So if you're
Furman.
If you're a team like Alabama, Georgia, you got a shot at winning the conference. But if you're these other teams. I mean, there are a lot of SEC teams with two losses that are still ranked really relatively high. I mean, they're going to get the benefit of the doubt. They're going to get a more likely scenario to make it in one of these 12 teams over any conference just because they're in the SEC. So even though it's expanded, it's still going to be slated towards SEC schools.
Okay.
It just is.
Well, and the Big Ten. And here's the thing.
I don't think the Big Ten is looked upon in the same fashion that the SEC as far as the rankings go. I just don't.
Well, I do.
It's Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State.
Sometimes.
And maybe Wisconsin sometimes.
Well, so that's an interesting thought you had there, because somebody actually did say, bag this. The SEC and the Big Ten need to do their own playoff. Oh, and they said, look, it should be this. You can have your little 12-team playoff over here and do your college football playoff. But what if you had the Big Ten and the SEC doing their own thing, and it was an 8-team top four out of each conference?
You stink, and I don't like you!
Talk about learning to hate college football again. After we finally have come back around and started to love college football again, and the idea of a 12-team playoff that matters, I mean, it is absolutely a massive deal. Okay. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Hey, Voice of the Utah Jazz. David Locke's going to join us next, and we're going to break down some of what this finals looks like as it starts up tomorrow. Join us on Thursday. By the way, that's tomorrow. We're going to be at the Be Prepared Expo at the Legacy Event Center up in Farmington. Discount tickets, BePreparedExpo.com. You've heard the commercials. If you're prepping for anything, they even throw in the zombie apocalypse. Social breakdowns, actual disasters, and the zombie apocalypse. If you want to be ready, go to the BePreparedExpo.com to find your discount tickets. We'll be there at the Legacy Event Center in Farmington tomorrow. More to go around the corner at 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to get the inside scoop on the Utah Jazz.
From the play-by-play voice of the Jazz, David Locke.
Sweet revenge!
Presented by Murdoch Auto Group.
Ow!
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. It is Unrivaled 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. David Locke, voice of Utah Jazz, is going to join us momentarily as we're watching this thing. Hey, ESPN just popped it up on their screen. Some shots of last year's. Boy, you forgot too. Brant Keithy was healthy in that game.
Yep.
The Utes were marching, and just that bad pick
wide
by Cam Rising.
Wide open in the back of the end zone.
Oh, you! I mean, the amount of times that I had to watch you with the telestrator when you got back from Florida, go, look at this. And I was like, hey, man, I get it. Trying to squeeze that throw in there was tragic. And it was just awful, too, because Florida did not deserve to win. I mean, they won the game, so they deserve to win. I always hate when people go, well, Utah deserved to win that game. It just was not, you know, as things start to go, you go, shoot, Florida got up for that game, and it's like they didn't get up for any other game the rest of the year.
No kidding.
Hate that. But Utah was
gotta get people at the right time of
Utah
year sometimes.
Was, well, and in Utah's case, guess what it did? Everybody took them off their radar for a minute. And then smash cut to when Utah beat USC twice, one of those to win the Pac-12 championship. And it's just fun to be able to talk about
that. That game in Salt Lake City against USC, that was a game. That was a football
game. Oh, the 42-43 game?
Yeah, that was a football game.
When they got up and they were going to go for two, I went, there's that little part of me that goes, no, just play for overtime.
Nope.
Heck no. Go straight to it, man.
Of course, that's when Cam Rising got hurt, too.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, too, because that was also the making of Dalton Kincaid. Do we forget that? I mean, you tell me.
I don't know.
Is this revisionist history?
I don't think Dalton Kincaid. Well, no. No, Cam Rising got injured on the 2-point conversion.
Right.
That really impacted.
But I mean,
him.
That game overall.
But Brant Keithy getting hurt certainly that had a massive impact. In fact, Dalton Kincaid should probably give Brant Keithy some of that first round money. Just say thank you. Here's a little bonus.
Well, that's the thing is that we remember
because I got a whole lot more attention when you were out.
Was it insane for me to think that Brant Keithy was a number one on in that tight end room? He was the guy, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We forget that.
Brant Keithy made a lot of big plays for Utah.
He was a Swiss Army knife.
He was
he was the Travis Kelce of this Utah team before. Yeah,
it'll be fun to see him back. I'll tell you the guy that I think might develop is Thomas Yasmin. He's the Aussie – who came back and he
scored
filled
that,
in.
Scored that touchdown in the Pac-12 championship game.
And he had just an incredible touchdown against Colorado. So I was just extremely impressed with him because he's one of these guys that just keeps getting better and better. And you don't know it because he never played football. So it's exciting to see that he may develop into something pretty special.
I wonder, too, if a moment like this where what if Utah doesn't have Cam Rising in that game against Florida? Because it still feels winnable, even though I don't know who the quarterback is.
I think Florida is a very winnable game, and I think where Utah is really going to be different this year is defensively. I think they have the ability to be a very elite defense. They've got depth at every position. They've got experience at every position, and they've got athletes at every position. I mean, they're just that's a nice defense right there. And it's one that understands what Morgan Scalley's doing, you know, because Morgan will show you a lot of different things, and it's going to be exciting to see how this team plays out this year. But defensively, it may be kind of the thing that holds the day early on in the season, and I think you can beat Florida with a really good defense. I'm curious.
Yeah.
So there was this article, and it's about Denver, and apparently Denver having an advantage in the playoffs because of the altitude, and that they've brought a lot of examples of the different teams that KD struggled and LeBron kind of had some issues, you know, and was there fatigue from being at altitude that maybe they didn't fully understand or appreciate, or, you know, but, you know, and the question is it a real thing? Does it have an impact over time? You know? And, I know that altitude is different. I mean, it's different. I wonder,
do we make a bigger deal out of it though? Because I think that you're the only thing that makes this kind of interesting is because we haven't had an NBA finals in Denver, ever. And so then you go, what are the finals going to look like then? What, Miami coming to Denver? But throughout the year, no one talks that much about it. No one cares that much about it. So how much do we make out of it?
Because you're in and out in a day, but when you have to keep coming back to it. And I would think that the more time you spent there, the more acclimated you'd actually get to it. I think a one game deal would be harder to handle than if you were playing a series like they are. You know, you're there, I don't know, and there's going to be a lot more time between games. So you're in Denver for, you know, what, 4 or 5 days between, you know, game one and game two.
Wouldn't that just end up being a benefit to you then?
That's what I think. I think it would actually be better. Yeah, but there's a debate over whether actually altitude has issues. It affects a football, you know, when you punt it. And I even think it affects I think you can throw it further. At altitude.
Well, that's what they say.
But does it affect a basketball? No, I'm serious.
I don't think so. I don't think to that effect.
You don't think it has?
No,
it's minimal. It's not.
Well, just watch. I guess when Miami goes in there and every ball hits back rim because they just put a little bit too much on it. It would have been a swish at home, but it hits the back rim on every one of them.
I'd love to see a scientific experiment.
I'm sure they've done it
on basketballs at altitude, and does it travel further and.
Mm.
You know, is there a slight adjustment you need?
Somebody
to make?
Asked me this the other day, by the way, too, because they were like, when all the teams come into Utah and to BYU, they love talking about it. You know, and those Southern coaches go, I don't know, my kids aren't prepared for this altitude. And, you know, we just, and they got these mature kids playing at BYU. And you hear the same garbage over and over. And I was like, you know what didn't matter last year with Arkansas coming to town was the altitude. All they did was go, altitude, I guess we'll throw the ball more. And they did. What'd they have, 600 and something yards of offense, and they put up 55 or whatever, with 52, 55 against BYU. So when people make a big deal out of it during the week, I mean, I remember Bobby Bowden tried to pretend like this was a thing. I remember interviewing Bobby Bowden and I've told you this story a bunch before, when he interviewing Bobby Bowden when they were playing BYU in Provo, and I think BYU was 2-0. They just come off a win against Washington, and they were, I think, a top 15 team. And Christian Ponder was the quarterback for for Florida State. They come in there in week three or maybe week four against BYU. And Bobby Bowden's like, man, with that altitude, I don't know how to prep these kids for. We're over here sucking air at practice. I don't know what's going on. My kids aren't going to be ready. And they put it on BYU. And so I don't think that there is as much of a deal as everybody's trying to make out of it.
I think
and these are highly tuned. About Miami. These guys have been playing all year. They are ready. There's no such version of them not being ready for a game like this. So I call foul on the altitude stuff.
I really think this. I know it. And the elements do have an impact. When you're a team, because I saw it when I was in Miami, and you would go to Buffalo, New York, or New York City, or New England late in the season, and your body's just used to it being warmer. You're in the warmth. So the cold, you know, does it mean you can't win? No. Does it have some impact? Yes. I know that the humidity had an impact on Utah a year ago, playing in Florida. There's just no way your body can prepare for that, and it's quite a rush to feel the, you know, you're just in this massive sweat across your entire body, and it's unusual. Now
bigger effect than altitude or the humidity.
I'd say humidity.
Big time.
No, 1,000%.
Yeah, because that's when you go.
If your altitude is like 8,000 feet, you know, where it's, you know, but, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 feet, I don't think it's that. We would have players that would come back from spring break, or they'd be gone for the summer, and they'd come back in the fall, and they would, for like a day or so, they'd go, whew, man, it's harder to breathe here.
Yes.
But then they get used to it, and your body acclimates to it, but it doesn't, it's not like they have to sit out of practice, or they can't practice, or they can't perform. It just has a slight, you know, slight impact on things, but humidity absolutely has an impact. And I appreciate coaches who are thorough and they're, you know, they cover all their bases, but I think sometimes you can get a little overzealous in some of your preparations as far as, you know, crowd noise and the elements, you know, dunking the footballs in wet water. And I mean, there's just all kinds of, you know, you can go a little overboard.
Okay, so here's one where, because I was looking at this and I was like, I wonder what it actually is. You know, what would the effect be of the altitude? So Mexico, El Estadio Azteca, right? That's they've actually played NFL games at Estadio Azteca. That's 7,200 feet above sea level. Now, I remember this from my days living in Argentina.
Well, that's high.
Yeah. You think that's high? When Argentina would play, Bolivia. In the, you know, for like World Cup qualifiers or South American, you know, qualifiers, things like that. So Bolivia has high altitude cities to the tune of Estadio Villa Ingeniero, Ingenio. Estadio de Villa Ingenio.
Sounds really high.
13,400 feet.
What?
Like, what's King's Peak here in Utah? What's the highest peak here in Utah? King's Peak, right?
I think it's 14.
You're playing at 13,000 feet, and that's what they do. They bring Argentina and make them play in this. They'll make them play at this in this stadium at 13,394 feet to try.
Why would you want to live at 13,000 feet?
That's
like, who lives at that altitude?
Bolivians, Peruvians.
I know, but
same thing.
But move to a lower altitude. Why do you have to be up?
Hey, that's not where you want to be. You want to come down to where we are, folks. Bolivia's beautiful. Peru is beautiful, man. Think of all these historic cities. But they do. Their advantage is that they go, man, we are gonna make this thing. It's gonna be high up here. You're gonna have a hard time playing at this altitude.
So Jeff Parson,
yep,
the center from he just texted me.
What did he say?
And he grew up in Florida, so he'd go home for the summer and then he'd come back, and he goes, you know what? It took more than a couple of days to get back to it, but he said, By far, a mile. He didn't say a mile. I'm exaggerating. It was a big factor. Humidity is a much bigger factor than altitude. So does the humidity affect Denver when they go to Miami? Right.
Scott, you played in Salt Lake, which is what, 40? I think the hills, I think Rice-Eccles is 4,500 feet above sea level. You played there your entire career. Then you went straight to Miami. Anytime we talk about any weather situations, you talk about You talk about the humidity like it is, it's the worst thing on the planet.
It's like a wet blanket put on you. I'm telling you.
Now, people get used to it, too. When you play down in it, you get used to it pretty quick, right?
Yeah. Now it's fun.
And the wonders it does for your pores, I'm telling you.
No, it does. It makes you young and you glisten. You don't have that ashy look.
Scott, I glisten. Yeah. I glisten as it is, all right, any given time.
When you're in it every day, it's fun when like the Pittsburgh Steelers come down and you make them wear that yellow and black in a nice hot, you know, September day in Miami, and they just or the Green Bay Packers, you make them wear their home uniforms with the yellow pants.
Right, yes. I love all this. I really do. I think it's
a thing, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute thing. But I wonder about basketball and how if it in I wouldn't think it would, because you kind of climate control it a little in an arena, right? You're not outside in the humidity.
No, I think that
so, when you so have really a, really so like weather it, weather like, has not as much of
right.
an impact.
So the Heat, when playing the Miami Heat, ironically, it's in air conditioning.
Yeah.
Now, the altitude.
Maybe they turn the air conditioning off.
They will not. They're like, we have to figure out how to make. We got to make sure that we are. The advantage that you have is one thing, but then if you want your fans to come back to a game, turn off the AC at the arena down there, and you go.
But those folks are used to it because they're used to humidity.
Hey, Miami, get ready. Come in here and get sweaty. We want the Nuggets to feel totally uncomfortable.
Look, watch how people dress in South Florida. They have hardly any clothes on as it is. They're all in open-toed shoes.
Yeah, man. I love it.
No socks.
Okay. Hey, any word on Locke?
Missed it by that much.
Hey, Jeremy. Just send him the bill anyway. Send him the bill. All right? We're going to keep going after him. Locke, we're going to run you down. He said he was coming on today, right? Talked to him before the show.
I want to talk to him about Jaylen Brown, my theory.
Ooh. Hey, he's not off the hook. You make him. We're calling him up tomorrow and saying, you got to make up for this, brother. Let's go. All right. We'll come back. More to go around the corner. We have our NFL roundup, among many other things. So stay right here with us, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Here we go.
Go get it.
Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
Louisville.
And the other guy on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. That music and the intro, of course, let it known. This is, of course, the NFL Roundup. Daily NFL stories for you to be able to get your football fix, even though it's not even June yet. Hey, June tomorrow, though.
Yeah. Right?
June's going to be tomorrow. That's freaking wild, isn't it?
You know what today is?
May 31st.
It is. It's National Utah Day.
Is it really?
It's a national day for Utah. Yeah, so...
Yesterday was National Women's Golf Day. That's why we had the announcement of the LPGA Tour coming to it. So that's interesting. It is. So it's National Utah Day.
Yes.
What do we want people to know about us that we could let them know?
Fry sauce.
At a national level.
Fry sauce.
Yeah.
Jell-O.
See, but I'm proud of... I think Jell-O 1 is much maligned, has no reason to get made fun of. It's good.
Oh, Jell-O's good. Amazing. Wonderful.
Fry sauce is amazing. Okay?
Great on fries.
But...
I mean,
as long as we're talking about it, might as well just point it out. It's good with fries.
You know where
it's a shocker.
Yeah.
Arctic Circle. Is that what you're going to ask about?
No, I can say you know where they first cooked French fries.
I'm not doing this. I already went through it. In Greece.
There you go.
Okay. I'm ready for it. Well, what are we trying to let people know? Well, let's give them a fact. Let's give them a couple facts. So Utah State facts, okay? So, since it's National Utah Day... Maybe you didn't know this about Utah, 45th state in the union.
They didn't let Utah join for a long time. don't upset the federal government.
You know, this part starts to get me grumpy. Salt Lake City hosts the Sundance Film Festival every year.
Yeah.
That is not Salt Lake City. That's Park
City.
That's
correct. But they do have viewing venues in Salt Lake.
I will tell you, those are like, hey, oh, man, where are we getting our film screened? They're like, Salt Lake City. Yeah. Oh, okay.
You have to kind of earn your way into Sundance.
Into Park City. Well, Sundance is funny because, you know, when somebody's not from here and you go, well, we're going to go up to Sundance and we're going to ride the lifts up there, maybe hike around, maybe go to Stuart Falls. And you're like, oh, Sundance. And you're like, it's not the same. Not the one you're thinking of. It's not the thing you're thinking of. So don't think that we're going to go up there and it's going to be where they do the movies.
And it's going to be Robert Redford. Although Robert Redford did own Sundance.
Do you know what our state animal is?
A state animal?
It's not the it's not the cutthroat. It's not the Bonneville cutthroat.
No, it's I want to say it's like it's a ground rodent. It's the pot gut.
It's the pot gut.
Is it the pot gut?
No, it's not the pot gut. We have a little bit more class than that, you doofus.
Wow. I like pot guts are cute.
Now, the pot gut, those are basically like
they're ground squirrels.
Right. They're like they're without kind of not much of a tail, right?
No.
Okay. Pot gut. I just like the name of them. But that's not our state animal, no.
Oh.
It's more majestic.
I know
very much more.
I know what it is.
Very much more
I actually
majestic.
Know what it
what
is.
Is it?
It's the elk.
It is the elk.
Is it the Rocky Mountain elk?
It just says elk.
Elk.
In parentheses, it says run of the mill.
Yeah. Just your good old standard.
Gut. Yeah. So there's some of the things. Welcome to Utah, everybody. If you're visiting, we want to say thank you. And if you were thinking about leaving, we never liked you anyway. So there you go. Utahns are more likely. We're the most read people in the country. We read the most books per capita of any other people.
Oh, I thought you meant like conservative read.
No, well, there might be that too. Yeah. Although we always get beat out by places like Idaho and Wyoming.
Yeah.
There's some Montanas in there. 8 Native American tribes that are native to here to Utah. 2002 Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
They were here. Scott,
gonna have them again too.
Let me see. More people visit Temple Square than any other place. Although right
in
now,
Utah?
Yeah, I'd say
the
right
national
now.
National
parks are big time. And I would say, yes. State symbol. You know what the state symbol is?
Beehive.
No, that's like the emblem, right? That's like our...
The symbol?
Yeah, the state symbol. I thought this was quite weird. The Dutch oven. It's the state symbol.
Dutch
oven. I'm not kidding.
Dutch oven cooking's a thing, and it's pretty darn good.
They get crazy with it. So there you go. All right. So there's some because it's National Utah Day, we wanted to commemorate it. So there you go. We should have done more with that. I feel like with the University of Utah, we should have had some sort of collaboration.
Yes.
National Utah Day. So, the Dutch oven is has been designated also as the state's official cooking pot. Boy, we are so bored sometimes in Congress, aren't we?
Bunch of prairie folks.
What you got in that Dutch oven? Some pot gut? Oh, my gosh. Okay. So NFL roundup. So, Scott, Brock Purdy, I don't know if you know this, according to John Lynch, I don't know if he'd say anything else. He says he's incredibly encouraged because Brock Purdy's throwing motion is looking on point. Says a safety, right? A former safety.
See, you never trust a defensive guy in his evaluation of a quarterback at all. He doesn't know.
Well, he has to break it down. He's the GM, man.
That looks good to me. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that.
That was a spiral, Bill.
I mean, it's like the guy had his arm ripped off, you know? And, I mean, I think anything probably is an improvement.
Probably looks better
than
that throwing motion. Yeah. Well, they feel a lot better about it. It's the best-case scenario for us right now. We hope he's ready for training camp. The hope is that he's ready also for the regular season. None of those things, by the way, sound any very positive at all. Well, we hope he's ready for training camp and really that he could be ready for the season, but we don't know. So,
do you know what would drive you nuts, or drive me nuts anyways? If I was in John Lynch's position,
mm-hmm.
It would drive me nuts if you feel – because they're so close. I mean, they have so many of the pieces right on that team. I mean, they are just right there. And the quarterback situation is just a bugaboo. I mean, it is just so
hard to figure out. It's
they have the guy. They thought they had the guy in Jimmy Garoppolo. I remember Jimmy Garoppolo's first five games when he was there, and they have just been so snake bitten. And it's a lot like when John Lynch played in Tampa Bay. You know, just never really had a quarterback until they kind of brought Brad Johnson in for a hot minute,
and even then.
Yeah, and it's just it's got to be a frustrating thing when you just can't ever get a position. You just get
I was thinking about Brad Johnson because it's not like he was a world beater. You know, they won that title. Everybody kind of looked at him and went, yeah, that's Tony Dungy's defense. But do you look at a guy back in your career and you go, that guy I have this semi kind of hate for because you're so jealous of the situation they were in versus the situation with you were.
Well, when I got drafted, yeah. Jeff George.
Oh, because he
was the first pick in the draft. I'm like, man, that guy, That guy's playing. You know who? Another guy who kind of made out pretty well is Neil O'Donnell.
Yeah, man.
Third round draft choice of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep, and he just hung around, didn't
and
he?
And he hung around for a long, long time.
Long enough to throw two terrible interceptions in the 1995 Super Bowl.
In the Super Bowl.
To Larry Johnson.
And a nice guy, a good guy.
Or Larry, what was his name? Larry, no. Actually, I can see it on his.
You know who kind of rubbed me wrong?
Who?
Because, so his first year playing was my last year in the NFL.
Who?
Was Tom Brady.
Tom Brady.
Like, you sit there and you just go, really? Mm. Like, the Tuck rule, and you're just like, you're kind of like, he's just a placeholder. He's not really, you know, he didn't come in and just light the world on fire like Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, he eased into it big time.
But he just kept winning. And you get in the Super Bowl, and everyone, like, you know who was the biggest don't do this guy?
Who?
John Madden. Listen to John Madden play his call of the final 2 minutes of the Super Bowl. This is a mistake. Play for overtime. Don't have Tom Brady out there trying to lead your team down the field to victory. he's out there saying this.
He's like, who is this guy?
And then about halfway through, he says, well, wait a minute. He's got a chance right here.
Because
they got Vinatieri, right?
Right.
So they know, like, we just got to get it close.
Get us to the 38.
We just
got to
get
fine.
It close. And it took years, Alex, before I ever just said, nah. Okay, Tom, you're good.
Yeah, he's fine. He's good. You finally earned that. And now does he top the list as best ever for you?
Yeah.
Just like everybody else?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, I always love this idea of a crossover. So Harry Kane, who is England's captain, and he's the all-time leading goal scorer in English football history, right? So he's like kind of a big deal. He is saying that he plays for Tottenham Hotspurs right now. He said he would love to give it a go to be a kicker in the NFL.
I would love to see some of those guys.
Who are world-class legs.
Yes, yeah.
World-class soccer players. And see if you go, okay, you know what it takes to hone yourself and get yourself into a spot where you could be the top, top, top of your game. Could you make the adjustment enough for you to be able to be a kicker in the NFL? Obviously, no one's going to question whether or not you have a strong leg, but it is a different ball, obviously. Scott, I don't know if you know this, Captain Obvious. It's a different ball. It's got a different shape to it.
Yep.
So you can't get the same.
It's not round.
Not going to act the
same. I think it would be easier.
To kick a football?
Yeah.
Mm. The end over end situation?
Well, no, because you can get more of your foot underneath the ball.
Mm. Well, Harry Kane says he wants to give it a go. He's 29 years old. I don't know what that is in football. You're in soccer years.
The problem, he's late, though, because the NFL basically now is saying what I think we've all known. Kickers aren't really football players. Like they're
ask Matt Gay though. You sign up, you'll get $5 million a year, man.
But they're kind of making them obsolete.
See, but that's what's good about this guy. Harry Kane has probably earned $250 million dollars over his.
So what does he care?
Right, and so he's just going and goes. I'm going to try. He says, I know it's going to be a lot of work. It's definitely something I want to explore. I mean, the idea of going over, living in the States, maybe go kick in Miami. English people love Florida, man.
Yeah, they
have
do.
Live in Miami. Have him kick for the. And I, by the way, I would freaking dial in like crazy. Like crazy.
You know who was really good?
Who?
They had one of the women's.
Oh, it was Carly Lloyd.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carly Lloyd. Like she had like a 54 yard.
That's a legitimate leg
right
there. Yeah,
she hit like a 54 yard field goal in practice for the Eagles, and everyone kind of laughed it off and kind of like, whoa, that's fun. And you go, you guys realize that if you're desperate enough, you need somebody. I would love to take a shot on somebody like Carly Lloyd.
How is Breece Hall optimistic that he can come back in week one from an ACL tear?
He got injured in October.
Right, and that's over 2 months before Cam Rising, and everyone's like, Cam Rising can be ready week one for
maybe, but listen, not all ACLs are created equal, you know?
Well, what's
but in
the
terms
difference?
Of the recovery, I don't know. I don't know. Not only are they optimistic, Scott, the word was, what was the word that Robert Saleh used? Freaking amazing. That's what he said, freaking amazing. Well, like the guy's an honorary Utah for National Utah Day. It's freaking amazing how
he's
coming back.
I could see Breece Hall coming back. I could see that. But Cam Rising 2 months
so
later?
When they give you that type of timeline then with Breece Hall and he goes, hey, I feel pretty confident. I might be back for game one, but he got injured in October. Same ACL type of situation. I don't know. The thing is we don't know the full nature of what either injury really is. I'm not an orthopedist.
Well, what it's an AC tear. I mean, what don't we know?
I don't know.
Is it a partial? Is it full?
Was there a magical? Well, it's surgery. I mean,
it's surgery.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's surgery, it's kind of.
Yeah.
No matter what, if you tear an ACL, it's surgery.
Who knows? Who knows? All right.
Somebody knows.
I'm looking forward to it. Hey, Aaron Rodgers, by the way, people saying that he absolutely ghosted the Packers during the whole negotiation process and that now he's refusing to talk to people. And Aaron Rodgers says, no, I talk to people that I actually want to talk to. One of the people is not the GM, for example. Basically, the people who aren't being talked to, and they go, he's ghosting us. He's like, well, no, I purposefully don't chat. Look, when you get older, you know how this is. We choose to.
So Aaron,
that's something you find out later. Nah. You go, are there people who I want to talk to in life? I don't want to waste my time with people that aren't interesting.
That's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not old. Aaron Rodgers is a guy who he's manipulating the narrative. Because back in the day, he goes, I just didn't like how the Packers handled it. And now today, he's saying, oh, I purposely ghosted certain people I didn't like. So he can't have it both ways. And that's just my concern with Aaron Rodgers.
They wanted to move on, and so do I, says Aaron Rodgers. So there you go. He's moved on. So stop trying to get a phone call from him. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. And when we do, we have our two-minute drill around the corner. You don't want to miss any of that. Stay right here with us, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Alrighty, sports fans, welcome back. Unrivaled 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery. That music means nothing else is going on but a two-minute drill. No. And that's where we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy, because everybody gets one of those. Joe Willie Namath.
What's up?
Is 80 years old.
Oh, he turned 80.
I saw the headline for a second. I go, oh, did Joe Namath pass away?
No. No.
He's 80.
Broadway Joe. And you know what? I would have thought he'd have been older. But I guess he's just a touch older than my dad. And yeah, it's about the same era. If we're talking about old guys and dads, and Father's Day's coming up. Hey, Scott, Father's Day's coming up.
Oh, it is.
When is it? Jeremy?
Father's Day.
Let's figure out it's on Father's Day.
So it's like the
second week of June or the second Sunday in June. Yeah. Anyway, bottom line is this.
Whenever the U.S. Open.
This, an 80-year-old guy just reminded me of this. Because Al Pacino, did you see this? He's 84 and he's going to have his fourth child.
Oh, he's going to have a baby.
Yeah. He has two kids under 10.
With a much younger girl.
Oh, she's not 84, you think?
No, she's
And they showed a picture of him and I'm going.
She's like 20 years from her AARP card.
He is too, but the other direction. Yeah. So I saw a picture of him and I went, oh boy, that guy, he's been through it.
What is
the desire?
I do not want children now.
Scott, I hate to break this to you. You have them.
No. I mean, like beginning.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm okay with grandkids. Grandkids
are
amazing.
I know, because at the end of the day, you can drive away.
I actually go home every night and I feel sorry for you. It's like, you got all these young kids. I'm like, man, I'm so glad I'm out of that phase.
I'm also, you know, 15-ish years younger than you.
Well, that's the thing. They do that parent thing when they're younger. You have the ability to handle it. I can only handle grandchildren now.
Well, Al Pacino, I'm sure he's going to be over-under on diapers change during his time as a dad.
Really?
0.5?
0.0.
Okay, so you're gonna take the under on 0.5 diapers?
I'll bet Al Pacino's never had a... I shouldn't say that.
The joke should be
That's
this.
Making a joke.
No. The joke should be
probably
this.
Probably has people that do that
he
stuff.
Has. He and his child will be both having their diapers changed. That's the joke.
The wife goes, in a minute, honey.
Yeah.
I've got to take care of the baby first.
Hold on. Just, you know what?
This hold will be, your pants on
no,
there.
No, this will be a lot easier. You just lay down right next to the kid and I'll get to you too.
We'll get a two for
two
here.
Two for one. Oh my goodness. Okay, so where are we even going? Happy Father's Day.
So
what I mean
the
is
older diapers
happy
are
birthday.
Just pull-ups, right?
Yeah.
That's not a
yeah. No. I like those commercials too, and they're like they're trying to make like there. It is what it is. And that's something that we're all going to be having to figure out. Yeah. But when they do this like thing, like now I can throw a football in the backyard, and you're like, I don't know, I would avoid it.
Hey, the Cheez-It Bowl.
Yeah. One of my favorite.
Gone.
It's not the cheese. It's... Oh, what?
Yeah, it's gone.
Hold on.
It's now the Pop-Tart
Bowl. Hey, Jeremy. Why are we getting to this late in the show?
And actually...
We should have led every hour with this. The Cheez-It Cracker Bowl is gone?
It's gone. It's replaced with Pop-Tarts.
Oh, you know what? If there's going to be somebody though who replaces it,
Pop-Tarts are not a.
Are they in the same family?
They're an except. They're the dessert form of Cheez-Its.
So it must just be dessert
Cheez-Its with sugar.
Oh my gosh!
Sugar coated Cheez-Its or Pop-Tarts.
So what? Okay, so what's the parent company? Pop-Tart.
The parent company. Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, but I think that they're probably owned by the same people, right? Kellogg's?
Camping World Stadium, Orlando, Florida. It's the Pop-Tart Bowl.
Yay! But you can't say Pop-Tarts. You have to say, you just can't say Cheez-Its either. Remember, they go Cheez-It crackers.
Oh.
So it's not Pop-Tarts.
Pop-Tart breakfast.
Yeah, it's the Pop-Tart Bowl, but it's pastry. Not Pop-Tarts. Yeah,
it's a Pop-Tart
It's a Pop-Tart pastry.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
And it's so much better if you put it in the toaster.
Cheez-It. Let me see who owns Cheez-Its. Yeah, Kellogg's, all Kellogg's brand. Yeah. So you've got how many Kellogg's things we have going on? Because Cheez-It, we got confused because there were two Cheez-It bowls, right? There's like the Cheez-It orange bowl, right? And then we get into one, there were like a couple of them now. So they got rid of that because Kellogg's is like, look, we already have Cheez-Its over there at this other bowl. We're going to do the Pop-Tart bowl, and then we've got Tony the Tiger bowl. Anything else Kellogg related? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Okay, this is a freaky one.
Yeah, what do you have?
Oregon golfer Greg Solhage.
Oh, my gosh, I saw this.
Withdraws from the NCAA championship after a tee goes through his foot.
Okay.
How in the world does a tee go? Did he step on it? Is he playing in flip-flops?
No, that's a good question. I don't know because I don't know what the tee. I've seen tees made out of quite a few different materials. None of them are hard enough to go through a shoe.
You mean like the tee box? But like wooden tee, right?
Oh, or yeah, it's the actual tee.
I think it was a plastic tee.
Either way. How does it go through your shoe? What are you wearing? I thought Oregon was a Nike school. Don't they have like something more solid? Either way, that would hurt too because that's like a dull object going up into your foot. Maybe it was the tee box. You know the little thing that sticks where the tee box markers
maybe,
are?
Maybe it flipped over and he stepped on the metal object there. My daughter's in respiratory therapy
school. She's not doing respiratory therapy.
She's a respiratory therapist.
Research. Okay, yeah, right. Yeah.
So she's in school. So she did her first clinicals.
Yes.
She's at the emergency room.
Yeah. Boy, she's seen some stuff.
She goes, Dad, first night, machete through the shoulder blade.
No!
Yeah. Someone came in with a machete
through the shoulder blade.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
All right.
The guy was hibachi style cooking.
That is BS. No, that's a domestic situation. Nobody accidentally gets hit in the shoulder blade with a machete, right?
He just accidentally.
I don't believe it. One second of this. I think we need to dig in more, see if the DA is going to start pressing charges. All right. Let's take this break for the hour. We'll come back next hour. We've got more. We'll come back next hour even stronger. With fewer references to Cheez-It and Kellogg subsidiaries. All right, we'll come back. More to go. Stay right here at 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.